Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, everyone. This is Kim with the Compassion Bikini. For tonight, we have Dr. Kira Meleps, who is a psychiatrist who is working overseas with the military men and women. And we are here, we'll be talking about mental health awareness this week and just asking Dr. Meleps, I call her Kira, talking about depression, talking about what is mental health, and just have a conversation. So, Kira, would you like to say hello?
Hello, everybody.
Okay, Kira. Thank you for being on the show. So, this week is about a Mental Health Awareness Week. So, can you tell us what is considered mental health and what is all about this awareness?
Well, mental health is, to make a long story short, I think, how you feel. How you feel about your emotions, how you feel about your life, not so much about how you feel physically, although that can often tie in as well.
And And also, for the callers out there, if you're interested, call in and ask any questions regarding mental health. Our number is 347-637-3220. And the number, again, is 347-637-3220. So what does it mean, like, to have a balanced mental health? What is considered balanced and what's considered unbalanced or not so healthy?
Well, actually, before we start, Kim, I just want to make a quick correction. I'm a clinical psychologist, not a psychiatrist.
Okay, so can you tell us the difference between all the lingos and psychologists, psychiatrists, and all that, please?
Of course. A psychiatrist has gone to medical school, and they have an MD or a doctor of osteopathic medicine, which is a DO, and they can prescribe medicines. And a clinical psychologist has a doctoral degree, and in very rare with very rare experience and in very few places, they can also prescribe medicine with the right conditions. And then we have social workers who have a master's in social work, and counselors, which are usually people with a master's or perhaps a little bit less, at least a bachelor's, however, in psychology or counseling. And in different states, there are different things that different people can practice. So it's for the most part, it's a state-by-state kind of differentiation.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. So excuse me for saying it wrong. So please educate us on mental health in, you know, this 20 minutes or so. So let's talk about the awareness. What are we doing to help promote the mental awareness for this week? How can we help?
Well, everybody, you know, everybody knows someone who has a problem, and most of us will at some point in our life also realize that we're going through a little bit more than we maybe can handle. And you had asked before about having balance in mental health, and balance is knowing that there are bad days. We all have bad experiences, and we all have bad days, and not pathologizing that, not making a bad day into something more than it is, but also being able to recognize that we have good days and that most days are somewhere in between bad and good, and that this is how life is, and that we're just like most other people out there if we're experiencing some difficulty. And when it really gets into a concern is when there are more bad days than good, or you find that your coping skills are just not up to snuff and you're not able to handle the normal stressors in life, or even the unusual stressors in life. Sometimes life throws a little bit more at us than we're prepared to handle, and that's the time that it's worthwhile getting concerned and perhaps seeking help if you feel like that is necessary.
I see. And as far as with your experience in helping men and women, do you see that there is a difference on the way men handle stress as far as, you know, long-term traumatic stress compared to women? I mean, what's your experience? Is there a difference between men and women?
Well, if you're talking about traumatic stress, such as PTSD, which lots of people hear about these days because of the conflicts in the Middle East, traumatic stress, for the most part in my experience, and this is not with research or anything like that, but in my experience, women tend to look a little bit more like they're depressed, and men tend to look a little bit more angry. They express a lot of their experience their post-traumatic stress as anger, whereas women will withdraw and start to wonder what's wrong with them and why they can't handle it. In terms of regular day-to-day stress or even the more acute kind of stress, men and women often handle things very similarly. We're really not built that differently in terms of how we handle stress or don't handle stress. You know, we yell, we scream, we cry, we withdraw from people, and sometimes we even seek help.
Thank you. And what about, what are some practical ideas that you have, or in, you know, people who are dealing with stress that's a little bit more handle, or maybe have a little bit more of bad days than good days? What are some of your recommendations that you give to people, men or women?
Really, the way to start, if things aren't too bad yet, and everybody's a little different on where they are with too bad, but is to look at your basics. It's really important that your basics are in order. Figure out whether or not you're sleeping well, whether you're sleeping at all, whether you're sleeping too much, and find some balance and try to get back into good sleeping habits. Because if your mind is not rested, if your body is not rested, it's almost impossible for you to handle things well, you know, in the days that come after not sleeping well. And so the basic of sleeping is almost always where I start and where I start looking first. Another is eating properly, making sure that you're getting enough nourishment and healthy nourishment, not junk food, not, you know, not starving yourself, just good basic food that will keep your body going throughout the day. Because, again, if you're not going to function well, if your body's not fueled properly, your brain's not going to function well either. Very, very often I will encourage people to get back to the gym or just get more active in movement, get more movement into their lives, especially out of doors movement. We find that people who have depression or who are dealing with a lot of stress become so overwhelmed that they drop out of their regular activities and become more sedentary, which actually makes their mood decrease more. And so, talking to people about getting into the gym again, getting out, taking a walk. It can be simple things. You can do the Wii Fit even, but just being able to get some more movement into your life. And, of course, taking stock of whether or not you're drinking alcohol and how much you're drinking or using any other drugs is very important, because alcohol is a depressant and certainly can make things feel a lot worse, although many people think that it makes them feel better. So I always look at those basics first, which can seem just that for many people is enough if they can get those things back in check to start to handle things better and move forward towards good mental health.
I see. And okay, so besides the sleeping, the eating, and the exercise, what other recommendations do you have for just acute stress? You know, like just having changes or people going through, because we're in the military, so we move a lot, and there's a lot of changes that are happening constantly, and you're in a new environment, or the kids are in the new school, and those are more of like I see those are more of acute stress. What are some of your recommendations for those type of people?
I always recommend triage, taking a look at what can actually be changed, what can you have some control over, and what's realistic for you to be able to work with. There are things when you move or when you have a new school, when things are changing frequently, that you really don't have any control over. And working with the military, it's a big machine, and many, many things we're feeling out of control over, which contributes to having stress. Lots of people like to know exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen, and that's just not always possible. So knowing that those things will come up that you have no control over and letting them go, doing your best to say, you know what, that thing at the top of my list, that probably isn't going to happen. Let's look at number two and see if maybe that's something that we really can have some control over and make some change with. I think that that's probably the best thing you can do initially when you're experiencing a lot of quick changes.
Okay, wow. Thank you very much. So, all right. This show is about compassion Dakini, and the Dakini is known as a pulse, and compassion is all around us, and it's about, I like to always find out from my guests, what is your definition of compassion?
That's a really hard thing to define. I like to think of compassion as being able to look at any person, even if their behavior is bad, even if they treat us poorly, as another human being who deserves to be treated well and to be heard. And I think that speaks a lot to my profession, of course.
Uh-huh.
But being able to be empathetic without pitying someone, not feeling sorry for them, but being able to listen and feel for the pain that they're experiencing.
And what are some of like the best skills that we need to develop on how to listen with empathy? Because in your job, you listen to a lot of people. What are some of the skills of how to be a good listener for someone that is needing some help?
Always keep in mind that we're all human beings and we all deserve to be heard. And even if there's frustration, allow the person to talk. Just take a deep breath and don't open your mouth until that time comes where it's an appropriate time. I think oftentimes, especially as helpers, we want to jump in and offer advice and try to change the course of things. And to be a compassionate listener, you really have to listen. You have to be able to not talk at the right time just as much as talking at the right time. So just stopping and being okay with being a listener instead of an active participant, I think can be very helpful. Keeping the human aspect in mind. It doesn't matter how much you disagree with a person's standpoint or what they've done, but recognizing that they deserve to be heard. I think that to be a compassionate listener, you have to have a pretty open mind. You have to be able to let go of some of your prejudices when you listen to people, because the prejudices will get in the way of really hearing what they have to say.
And so that is that's very helpful. And what about is there a different way of like listening to men and women? You know how like from my experience anyway, men has a tendency to just not talk very much, where women, they just keep going and you know they express all their emotion. So what are some of the skills that we can learn between listening with men and women? Like from a woman's perspective, listening to a man, and from a man perspective of listening to a woman.
Well, I can't really speak to how a man listens to a woman because I'm not a guy.
What tips can you give men to like, hey, this is how you need to listen to us?
Got it. Well, I think from the other side, when I listen to men, I try to put myself in a similar mindset to what they are bringing to me. And each man brings something different. Some men are very sensitive, some men are very angry, some men like to swear up a storm and express themselves via strong language. And I try to meet them where they are. And they can definitely hear what I have to say if I can come at them from a perspective that they understand. So if they're swearing up a storm, I'm going to swear up a storm too when I'm talking back to them. It makes it much, much easier to communicate with them. And I actually find that that works quite well most of the time. Occasionally, of course, it doesn't work as well. And just letting them know that you're not there. As a mental health professional, there's a lot of stigma, and people are worried about being punished. You know, they're going to come into mental health, and there's going to be some kind of a punishment that goes along with that. And letting them know that with certain exceptions, that's not going to happen. I'm not here to punish you. I'm here to help you and to help you help yourself. I don't want you here. I want you to do well enough that you don't ever have to come back. And guys like to hear that. They really appreciate knowing that that you don't really want them there because they're going to be able to help themselves. They like to be active on their own. Women can be, obviously, women for the most part are much more open about their emotions, although really oftentimes have the same setbacks as men in terms of whether or not they want to express themselves, whether or not they feel like they're going to be punished, because again, working with the military, there's always the worry that there's going to be some kind of a attachment to their careers. You know, you saw mental health, and so you shouldn't get this promotion, or you shouldn't get to go to this place, or something like that. Women are easy for a woman to listen to. We understand one another. We kind of understand where one another are coming from, and so that makes it easy for men, I think. This is going to be on a case by case basis, but I think for the most part, women don't necessarily want men to fix their problems. They want men to just stop and listen and look as if and act as if they're interested in what we have to say and concerned that we're getting the support that we need. If men can show concern, can show compassion and empathy without trying to fix the problem, they may find that they get a little bit further.
I see. And okay, so this is another thing I'm kind of curious about depression. So, you know, there's just a lot of depression that's going on, and I understand that there's depression that sometimes occur with the seasons and sometimes occurs with the wrong diet, just the not the sleeping pattern. So, what is categorize as depression? And you know, you were talking about there are a lot of antidepressant drugs nowadays. So can you educate us or just teach us some basic things about depression? And what does it mean by mental health perspective? What is diagnosed as depression?
Most of us know when we're depressed, we know. It's a feeling of being sad or down, a feeling of being unmotivated, perhaps for some people, but it can also look like anger, it can look like frustration or irritability, it can look like you're miserable, and all of us are going to express our depression a little bit differently. But from a mental health and clinical perspective, an official diagnosis of depression can only come if you've been feeling that way pretty much all of the time for 2 weeks or more. So it's a fairly long period of time that you're feeling down. We all have down days, or even down, you know, several days in a row, or even a week. But until it becomes 2 weeks or more with a certain grouping of symptoms, we wouldn't necessarily be diagnosed as having depression. Depression often comes with difficulty sleeping, loss of interest in things that you used to find interesting or pleasurable. Feelings of guilt are often a part of it. Attention and concentration may be off more than normal. Appetite can be increased or decreased, and there may be weight gain or loss associated with that. There may be some lethargy, some real slowing of motor skills. Energy is going to be low, typically. And there may be thoughts of suicide that are associated with it as well, or self-harm. Those are common symptoms that go along with it. Lack of motivation also is often a symptom of depression, as is a distinct lack of libido.
Uh-huh.
And there are lots of ways to treat depression, and depending on if you go to see a mental health professional, what kind of mental health professional you see may very well inform what options you are given. If you see a psychiatrist, very commonly, most commonly, medication will be a part of the mode of treatment, although most psychiatrists also recognize, of course, that talk therapy is very helpful as well. If you go to see a clinical psychologist, most frequently you're going to get some kind of a talk therapy, either cognitive behavioral or maybe insight-oriented therapy.
Uh-huh.
And there may be a recommendation for medication as well if there's a severity serious enough to warrant that. So, and then social workers and counselors and such also will try to balance out the proper approach for the level of depression you have, how much it's affecting your life, how severe things really seem. And the most common medications are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, and they're the ones you see most commonly as ads on TV, like Prozac or Zoloft or Celexa, things like that. And they tend to inhibit the reuptake of the neurotransmitter serotonin in the brain and level out these neurotransmitters to give you a little bit more of a balanced feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another thing with medication and depression, so also, part of the show, we like to talk about happiness and how do we find happiness. And once we find happiness, more likely, you know, we are filled with joy and that just brights the person up and they will have more compassion and so on. So for your definition or your perspective, is happiness is a state of mind, or is it happiness is moment to moment, or is happiness is more like a journey? Can a person be happy all the time, do you think?
I have yet to see the person who's truly happy all the time. I would love to believe that that's true. I'm ever hopeful to find that person, although I'll probably never find them because I'm a psychologist, and so they wouldn't come and see me. But I think happiness is all three of those things. I think happiness is found in any given moment. I think happiness is a journey. And I think that, you know, it comes from everywhere. And I'm lucky enough to be, for the most part, to be a happy person. I'm certainly not happy all the time. But I think that that I find the most pleasure in just moment-to-moment enjoyments, being able to scratch my dog or smell the roses that are out in front of my house, or to notice the beautiful sunset. And I have a state of mind that allows me to recognize those things as beautiful and pleasant, and that contributes to further happiness. And so that makes it a journey. But also knowing yourself really well and being accepting of who you are is a huge part of being happy.
Mhm. Wow, that's a great definition there, Kira. So one of the things that recommendation with many people when, you know, for depression is, oh, go do meditation, go do yoga, go do this. And everybody is searching for some form of meditation on how to calm the mind. So what is your advice on people who they have a lot of chatter in their head? What's a great way? What would you recommend for those type of people where their head is just full of talk?
My favorite thing to try to teach people or to help them learn, and everybody's a little bit different in how they want to approach it, but I prefer, I like meditation very much. Just a basic mindful meditation of what is going on, what is occurring in this moment. And it's a non-thinking meditation. And so it allows you, when you master it well enough, it allows you to block the chatter in your mind and be aware of all of those things that your senses are picking up in any given moment, what you smell, hear, taste, see, or touch. And I practice this very commonly for just a few minutes at a time during sessions with patients to give them a sense of that. And usually we do it with our eyes closed because the visual stimulus is a bit overwhelming when you're trying to learn this technique. But closing your eyes and blocking out the chatter and just listening to the sounds that are around you, or noticing what smells you can smell, or noticing that you have an itch on your elbow and that you're feeling a little sluggish today, are all things that are much more benign than most of the chatter that's going on in a person's head when they're having some difficulty with mental health.
Wow. So you should, like, you know, become a meditation expert and have, you know, classes, Kira. That's awesome. Okay, so last question, Kira. If you had to design, if the mental health awareness president comes to you, go, hey, can you design a wristband or a shirt or something that shows that, hey, this is Mental Awareness Week, what would your slogan or your words of wisdom or what would it be? What would you design?
You know, I actually had thought about this a lot since you contacted me, and I am so not creative, and I couldn't come up with anything, but I think it's pretty funny. Several weeks ago, our flight had to come up with a new, I don't even know what they're called, I can't remember what they're called, but sort of a new chant for commander's calls, and we had a vote, and there were several different things that our more creative mental health professionals put out there as possibilities. And one that I particularly liked was just mental health, get some.
Ah, cool. So on a shirt, on a band, just a ribbon?
Yeah, get some.
Okay, listeners out there, get some mental health, get some mindfulness meditation, get some peace of mind and some happiness in your life. So thank you so much, Kira, for
thank you,
being
Kim. Thanks for
on
having
our
me.
Show. And I really enjoy our talk. You gave us a lot of information, and I understand the show is a little bit short, so we can't cover everything. But thank you so much for being precise and giving us all the information we need. Thank you, thank you, thank you. For all the listeners out there, thank you so much. Have a wonderful night and afternoon or evening. I appreciate you. Thank you, thank you. Have a wonderful week. Thanks, Kira.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.